Welcome to the Life on Purpose podcast. I'm your host, Amy Debrick, and I'm so glad you're here. As you know, purpose gives you confidence. Confidence that you know what you're doing and why you're doing it, even if you haven't figured out how to do it yet. Purpose provides certainty that what you're doing does matter. And when you act with purpose, you project strength, authority, and authenticity. Because of that, I am so excited to share season 4 with you and all the tools, resources, and shared wisdom that will help you build and keep the confidence and self-esteem you need to be brave, and also to live the life God has for you. Being confident about our purpose helps us stay in our lane and eliminates comparisons. Now, if you are looking for some one-on-one coaching to help break down self-doubt and rebuild your self-esteem, be sure to schedule a free discovery call with me today. You can access that link on my website at amydebrick.com. But for now, let's get started. Well, welcome everyone to the Life on Purpose podcast. This morning, I am excited to talk with Brittany Braswell. Brittany, am I saying that correctly, the last name?
Yes, Braswell. Oh, some Braswell. People put a little heavy S or a little more Z, so it's all right.
Well, Brittany is a registered dietitian, and we're going to talk about food and freedom, two things that I think can never be talked about enough, especially in today's culture. I think there's a lot of influences that are just drowning our kids' feeds and on social media and all of that. And I think when you have an eating disorder or you maybe run that fine line, it's really hard to escape all of these images and all of that that we hear and the lies that come with that about our bodies and what we should look like and what we should be. And so I'm really excited, Brittany, to talk to you today. But before we dive into all of that, tell us just a little bit about yourself in addition to just being a registered dietitian.
So yes, I'm a registered dietitian, but my specialty in education and practice is really disordered eating, eating disorder recovery, body image, kind of everything that falls into that realm of stress and anxiety and worry when it comes to food and your body. Maybe even a lot of obsession or a lot of obsessive thoughts where you're constantly like in fear around how you look or how you feel like maybe other people perceive you or your appearance. And so, especially, you know, at the time of this recording, this is something that I'm talking with so many of my clients about because I live in the South and it's starting to get very hot. And if you experience stress or anxiety when you think about your body or the way it looks or how you feel like maybe you should eat, or there's that like one right, best, only perfect way to eat and you're not doing it and that's giving you stress, that's my area where I come in and try to, you know, help you break off those layers of diet culture and really walk with confidence in the body that you're in, nourishing it well, but also honoring your mental health at the same time.
I love that. I think it's so important, Brittany, because like you said, we're going into that warm season and we all are like, do I want to put my shorts on yet? I'm not really sure, let alone slip in a bathing suit. We're all scared. But I do think there is a distinct line between those normal feelings of, oh, the weather's coming. I need to get in my summer shape a little bit more, and an eating disorder and what that really looks like. So talk a little bit about that, if you can. And is there something that you find as a common underlying factor where it crosses over between, like I said, which is more of a normal, like, oh shoot, I need to cut back on the junk for whatever, and a shift in, this is really becoming like an actual serious issue?
So that's a great question, Amy. And I think that's something that I hear a lot because unfortunately our culture, society today has so normalized dieting and bad diets and, you know, labeling foods, you know, as good or bad or healthy or unhealthy. And so even though we use a lot of that language and so many people just kind of throw it around and don't really have a lot of emotional ties behind it, I think where you really start seeing it cross the line, in addition to the fact that, you know, an eating disorder does have specific criteria that you meet, maybe that qualifies you based on your different levels of anxiety and specific behaviors and how long those take. But for the typical person, when you start noticing that you're thinking about food or about your body more than what you normally would under, you know, typical circumstances. So an example of that might be For the average person who doesn't struggle with disordered eating or, you know, severely negative body image, you know, they're going to think about food when they're starting to get hungry, or maybe when they smell something that sounds appetizing, right? Or somebody mentions, hey, do you want to go out to eat later? Those are going to be the types of things that make you think about food. Maybe even looking at a clock and going, oh, okay, lunch is coming up soon. Or, oh man, I'm noticing, you know, food's running low. I need to go to the grocery store. And you might have a little bit of stress thinking about it, but maybe that's kind of more typically when you're thinking about food, or you're thinking about your body when you are getting ready, or you're showering, or you're changing clothes, or you scrape your knee, or you bump your toe. But it really turns into a lot of stress for people when those are the types of thoughts, or you're thinking about food in your body all throughout the day. I work with so many women, and Amy, I don't know if you can relate to this or some of the listeners, but if you see your reflection and you're not real happy with it, and that carries into your day, or that turns into, okay, well, now I have to try on 6 different outfits in my closet to find something that I feel like fixes that thing in the mirror I didn't like. Right. That's where a lot of that anxiety comes up, and it usually ends up impacting not just your mindset and mental health for the day, but also your behaviors. And that can turn disordered really quickly.
Yeah, that's interesting that how you say that, because, you know, I think for most of us, that's normal, like you said, but it's that shift in now it's just consuming you, you know, it's not just the normal appropriate times it's happening. Now it's just, that's all I think about. And it's wrecking my day and my mood beyond that. Well, I know that you work specifically with, you know, in recovery. So what are some maybe practical tools to help anyone listening today, or maybe somebody they know that's struggling with an eating disorder, or maybe just on the line of, you know, maybe they're not there yet and we don't want them to get there yet, but that might be holding them back from a recovery process, or having the confidence to feel good about themselves, even if they're not in their ideal shape or weight. You know, I mean, it's an ebb and flow, right? Like, I mean, you know, sometimes we are and sometimes we aren't, but like you said, if it's not consuming us, then that's a healthy ebb and flow. But if it's becoming a problem now, and that's all we can think about, and now it's creating this inner anxiety, and the way we see ourselves and all of that is becoming altered, you know, what is advice, and what are some practical things that you do to help women overcome that?
So I'll give you maybe like one on the mental health mindset side of things, and one on the like practical something you can do today kind of thing. So from a mindset standpoint, one of the very first things that I recommend people do is to really like just take, maybe it's 5 minutes, maybe it's an hour, maybe it's sporadically throughout the week, jot down anything that you believe to be 100% true 100% of the time. This is what I would call a core belief. So these are things that like you just know at your core, and it doesn't mean they're factual, but you believe and behave as though they're true. And so those things are typically going to, you know, impact lots of different thoughts you have throughout the day, right? Like if I have a core belief that I'm not good enough, that's going to show up probably in lots of different ways as I go about my day, and feeling like I'm constantly striving to prove myself, right? Same thing with, as you start going through them, they may not all feel like they're related to food or your body, and that's okay, right? You're going to have core beliefs about your faith. You're going to have core beliefs about, you know, maybe the world or people in general or relationships. But so often, even those ones that we don't anticipate maybe reflect or impact our choices around food in our body, so often are connected. Right. I'll give you a quick example. I had a client who said that like one of her core beliefs was, essentially like I have to earn, you know, love, appreciation, like my works and my, you know, behaviors. This was something like from when she grew up, like she needed to get A's and she had to constantly be doing, you know, like perfection work with her chores. And she was started noticing how that was impacting the way that she saw food, because if she didn't feel like she ate quote unquote perfectly, she didn't feel deserving of love, right? Or if she didn't look a certain way, then again, that impacted how she saw herself and her identity. So that's a really great place to start, is write those out. And then I like to put like a little, you know, column next to it and mark put a check mark, make a column that says like, is this something that, is this a belief that I want to change? And maybe yes or no, right? Like I have core beliefs I don't want to change. I believe that Jesus, you know, came to earth and died on the cross to save my sins. That's not something that I want to change, right? So start with that and then make another column that says, after, is this something I want to change? Is this core belief impacting the way that I view or care for my body, right? And so that sometimes takes a little thought. That's something that I work through personally with a lot of my coaching clients, because sometimes that's hard to tell. I'll have clients that fill that out and they're like, no, this doesn't impact the way that I view or take care of my body. But as we go through it, they're like, oh my goodness. Yeah, that's related. So that's a good place to start, just to try to kind of sort out your thoughts and what are you believing that might be impacting the way that you're caring for yourself or withholding care maybe. And I guess from a second, like just practical, something you can do today is if you are struggling with body image, like one of the best things that you can do is to dress in a way, like in a style that you like, colors that you like, and in clothing that fits your current body. Stop trying to get those jeans out of the closet that you, you know, wore in college or 5 years ago or before your baby and go, oh, I feel like I should change my body to fit into these. Like I should be wearing this right now. Right. We are not made to fit somebody's label on a pair of shorts, right? We were talking about summer season is coming out, right? It is absolutely okay to take care of your physical and mental health by saying, I'm going to go buy a new pair of shorts. And yes, I understand there's like a financial component to that,
right?
But when you think about the cost of like sacrificing your self-worth and mental health versus paying $15 or $20 for a new pair of shorts that fits you, that's comfortable, that keeps you from thinking about your body every day,
right?
All day. Like that's a huge benefit, right? That even goes for women who are listening, like bras, undergarments, right? If you are wearing something that is too snug, right? Or that's just uncomfortable, it's going to draw your attention back to your body constantly, right? And one of the best ways we can work to improve body image is actually to get our focus away from our body. So that's something I say quick and easy, but it's definitely, you know, it doesn't always feel easy to go, okay, well, I am going to put these jeans on that I've been trying so hard to get out of, right? I'm going to wear something that fits my body and I'm not going to attach my identity to the number or the size on the tag.
Right. I think that that's such a really good tool and just a practice to start doing, because for years, it's so funny. I have two daughters, and even for myself, I know that first of all, as we all know, every pair of jeans, shorts, whatever it is, every piece of clothing is made slightly different, just depending on who the manufacturer is. If it's maybe a little cheaper made or more expensive, whatever the case is. So the number does vary for the same body, for the same size. So what's interesting about that is for years, you know, I used to tell, like, I remember the first time my oldest daughter had gotten something, and I can't remember what her size was at the time, but it was like the size that we would typically buy. And she had gone in the fitting room and she was like, oh, gosh, these are like skin tight. Like, I can't believe it. I'm normally a whatever. And I could tell she was almost like getting discouraged. Like, you know, something must not be right with her because, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, first of all, like you had said, it's just a number. What's more important is you actually pick out a pair that actually fit you. So if the number goes up, okay, so be it. It goes up. It could just be, I mean, if you haven't changed, and like you said, you're saying, and it's making you feel more comfortable, then just get the size that's appropriate and don't worry about the number. And, mm-hmm. you know, when my younger daughter was little, a lot of times just out of comfort, you know, how kids are funny about like tags and that, just that feeling, you know, we always cut them out anyway. And so I think there's something to be said for that just in general, is not wrapping, like you said, your identity around what that number says, because the reality is the number isn't always accurate and the number changes. So if we're so hyper-focused on that, we're not even recognizing the inconsistencies that naturally come with these labels and numbers in our clothes. So I love that. I think that that's just a really great practice to begin. And just, it's like a gentle shift in mindset. And the other thing that I love about it is, and I'm all about, especially with anxiety and trying to be more confident in who you are, is taking that intentionality and the pause to do it. I feel like as women, especially, we offer so much more grace with other people. And so one of the things that I have in a course that I've created is when we flip our self-talk is asking ourselves when we're kind of challenging those negative thoughts, would I be saying the same thing to somebody else? And most of the times the answer is no, we would never be that harsh to somebody else. But for some reason, we have so much of an easier time doing that for ourselves. So do you see that with the women that you meet with and coach and all of that?
All the time. It is a recurring theme, and it's something that we dig into and really dive deep in, especially in our live coaching calls, because that does come up. It's like, well, you know, I would never say that to my daughter or to my friend or whomever. But then we have this double standard where we feel like, okay, well, I'm the exception to this, right? Like maybe scripture even says this applies to everybody, but I'm the exception. Or no, I don't base anybody. I don't think any less of anybody because they're wearing a different size shorts, which by the way, nobody's going to look at your tag on your shorts, right? Nobody's going to go, excuse me, is this the same as last year?
Yeah. So, exactly. Nobody cares.
But we do, right? And so I have to do the same thing. We kind of go through some different like examples and strategies with my clients to do the same thing, to challenge that mentality of, you're saying like, okay, their opinion matters a lot, right? Or their well-being matters, but why not yours? And for so many, it comes back to one of those core beliefs. And one of those core beliefs may even be connected to some trauma, right? Like I run a trauma-informed practice because I feel like that's absolutely necessary when you're looking at struggles with anxiety and disorder of eating, because there's a lot of things you might be believing because of unfortunate and you know, damaging even situations that have happened, whether it's, you know, like a big T trauma, some type of abuse or neglect, or something we would consider more of like a little T trauma that is still as impactful, but you might not think about it as, oh, this was traumatic, right? It could be that comment that somebody made about the size of your nose or your hips or whatever in sixth grade when you were changing in the locker room, right? That you feel like, well, that wasn't a big deal, but then it's created this change in how you see your body and it's impacting you. Right. So yes, it's so hard. It seems like for us to give ourselves that same level of grace and appreciation as we do for other people. I like to kind of call it like it's like you have a really bad roommate in your head, right? Like if I was living with someone that was constantly telling me like, you look terrible, you're just awful. Like, what were you thinking? I can't believe you're doing this. You're, you know, on and on and on. You would never choose to live with that person. You would either, you know, kick them out or say like, I'm going to remove myself from this and go find another roommate. But we let those bad roommate thoughts live in our head. And it's like, we're giving the enemy permission to walk all over us. And so that's where it becomes so important to get some accountability, whether it's a friend who's gone through something similar that's, you know, through the other side of things, that's maybe not in the middle of the struggle. Mm. Maybe it's a family member, maybe it's a coach or provider. But being able to have someone to help you recognize when you're not giving yourself that grace and challenge to see where that's coming from, that's where you can really start seeing a lot of the breakthrough and working through some of those barriers that might be keeping you in that spot.
Yeah. I think that's great. I love the analogy of the roommate. That is so true though. I mean, you wouldn't live with that person. You'd be like, gosh, they are like the worst.
And yes. Yeah,
allow it in our own brains and in our own. Yeah. That's so interesting. Oh my gosh. I love that, Brittany. So the other thing I wanted to just ask you before we wrap up, and I want people to actually be able to connect with you outside of this interview, but can you just share a way that people could reframe their thoughts for a lasting recovery? So let's say you're maybe on the right road, but you're not quite there yet. What are some of the common setbacks you see and maybe why, and then how can women avoid those if possible?
That's a wonderful question. So I would say in conjunction with core beliefs, there's a subset of core beliefs that we would consider limiting beliefs. And what I see a lot in my practice and in the work that I do is that there's really four main limiting belief themes that show up over and over again. So I think something that can be really helpful and practical is when you can go, when you can figure out and you jot those core beliefs down that we talked about just a little while ago, and you can start recognizing, okay, what, like, where do each of these kind of beliefs fall? Then you can get really strategic as to how to challenge them, because you can't challenge the same problem. You can't challenge a variety of problems with the same sort of strategy or solution. The more specific you can get, the more effective your strategies are going to be. So something that I have done within these four like main limiting belief themes that I just kept seeing come up over and over again. I created a resource on my website, and I'm happy to share the information if the listeners want it. But every behavior that you're struggling with that's disordered, whether it's food related or otherwise, this could be something related to substance use. This could be maybe an unhealthy relationship. It might just be something as simple as like mindless eating or not having, like not being connected with your hunger and fullness. When you can figure out like what need is that behavior meeting for you, then you can come up with a strategy that meets the same need. Because if you, like if I just try to say, okay, well, if you are having the urge to restrict, just go eat, right? Or if you're having the urge to binge, just find something to keep your hands busy. Like that might give you a super temporary solution in the moment, but it's not really getting at the core issue, because binging is doing something for somebody, right? We know physically and mentally it's not helpful, but in that moment, it's providing them some sort of perceived benefit, right? The same as restriction or over-exercise or body checking. So when you can go through and go, okay, well, how does this feel like it's benefiting me right now? Then you can go, all right, what else can I do to meet that same need? Because we still need our needs met. Right? Like it's absolutely valid, and it's not selfish to have needs. Everybody has them. And we can choose to, like, once we recognize what the need is, and sometimes that's a hard place to get to. That's why I created the needs assessment, just to help people get started on that. But that can be so impactful, because you can start going, okay, well, instead of just distracting me, I'm realizing that I really need to feel safe right now, or I really need to feel comforted. So how can I do that in a way that honors my physical, mental, and spiritual health and doesn't leave me still having the same need 5 minutes from now when the temporary has gone?
That's great. That is a good hands-on practical way to be able to do that. So I love that. Well, Brittany, before we wrap up this conversation, I mean, I just think that these conversations are, even though I know they come up, I just think that they should be coming up more often, I guess, and especially for this time of year, like I said. So can you just share with the listeners how they can connect with you outside of this interview, and also the resources that they can get from your website, like you mentioned, and other ways to connect with you if they are indeed looking for someone that they need some help a little bit more than just on their own, but maybe a guided dietitian like yourself that has this background of recovery along with eating disorders?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place to connect with me is actually through my website. You can also find me on Instagram at Brittany Braswell RD, but my website is brittanybraswellrd.com. And there is a resources tab there that has that needs assessment that I mentioned if you're interested in that. There's also a free ebook that kind of helps you start that process of learning how to get back in tune with your God-given cues from the Lord, that kind of walks you through the 10 different principles of intuitive eating from a biblical standpoint. So those are some really great starting places if you're just like, I have no idea what that even looks like, or I have no idea why I keep doing, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever behavior. And I love being in my DMs and chatting with people. So if you guys have questions about the episode today, or you want to learn more about whether it's working together, or just you need some other resources or even podcast episodes or anything like that, feel free to shoot me a DM at Brittany Braswell RD on Instagram or Facebook.
Thank you so much, Brittany. That was such an insightful conversation. I'm so grateful to women like you who are really helping with the problem of eating disorders and body image and all of that. So you're doing some incredible work, and I really appreciate you talking with me today.
Thank you so much, Amy. It was a pleasure to be here.
Well, friend, that's it for me today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode.
If so, please consider rating, reviewing, or subscribing to the Life on Purpose podcast so I can continue spreading encouragement and confidence. And if you haven't already, I would love if you would grab a copy of our book, Embolden. Embolden is an encouragement journal that I co-wrote with my oldest daughter, and its purpose is to meet women where they are today, but to not leave them there. So until next time, keep living your life on purpose, and God bless.